Session number 9754, Reel 3.
Mr. Williams, this is tape 3, isn't it? I wondered now if you could tell me about your arrival. This would be in Alexandria, is that right?
Yes.
And the date, can you remember the date?
Early June.
1917?
As I have said, we arrived in Alexandria in early June 1917. We were sort of made up to strength because, unfortunately, lorry-wise, we were short. The lorries had come on two or three different boats and some had been torpedoed. After reorganization, we did work on the docks at Alexandria, incoming supplies. This was more or less to get used to working in Egypt and getting used to the climate because it was pretty warm. We were quartered ourselves at Mustafa Barracks. I don't know if I'm wanted to go into details about Alexandria, but it's a very, very lovely city. As you approach it by boat, you're impressed with the low coastline because, of course, there are no mountains there, just the low coastline and a few palm trees. The work there was very, very interesting indeed. The goods were carried by natives, the native Egyptians. The Egyptian Labour Corps. They were recruited by our government, of course, to do the work, that is, the loading work from the ship to the lorries. They were in parties of about 20, organised by one man with a sort of a whip in his hand to touch them up if they didn't work quick enough. The usual word was higri in Arabic, which means hurry up. We noticed that the Egyptians were different to Europeans in their method of carrying. They didn't seem to have very much strength stomach-wise. They couldn't carry anything in front of them. They carried their burdens on the back. And if they were engaged in pecking up a road or something like that, picking up stones, for instance, they would have a small basket and sweep up the rubbish, the stones and dirt in their bag and empty it. But we did have a very interesting time, and when we finished the work at the docks, going out to the camp was quite interesting because you went out on a tram, a wonderful tramway system there. It went for some miles and there were about three trams linked together. The natives would just jump on anywhere and everywhere, hanging on, and the conductor would toot, toot, toot with his little horn and away we would go. Sporting Club, Sporting Club, any more for Sporting Club? Go on, we are at Mustafa Barracks. After a very short time at Alexandria, just a few weeks, we went up to Kantara. Kantara is on the Suez, and here again we were doing duty, taking supplies to the various troops who were camped in the area.
Did you have any idea of what activity was going on in that area?
Well, there wasn't much military activity, but of course we knew that there was a war on in Palestine. I believe historical records would perhaps have to correct me, but I believe there had been some previous fighting under General Murray, was it, on the Suez. The Turks had been driven back up to somewhere around Beersheba. As soon as possible, after a few weeks at Kantara, we were moved up to the Beersheba area. There was a small gauge railway that went up, I remember, and the troops were in trucks on this railway going up, and the big transport couldn't tackle the sandy soil, but the Fords were able to do this. Wire netting was placed across the sand, and the Fords could travel across the desert reasonably well on that.
So what did, were you driving Ford lorries then at that time, or did you still have
belonging to other departments?
Yes.
You know, no, we had our own lorries. They took them. They had to take them up for us.
And these were the Peerless, were they?
Yes, the Peerless. Yes.
This railway and the track that transport was being taken on, would this have been laid by the Allies? Or
yes. Yes. They had a railway there.
Did they lay the rails as the advance went forward, do you know?
Well, they must have done, because the Turks had Beersheba. I've got a picture of them with the wells blown up.
Yes, I must have a look at your pictures later. They sound most interesting. Mm-hmm. I was also interested in this wire road that you say was laid across the desert.
Well, it wasn't so much a road as where they wanted to drive a Ford, officers' transport or anything of the sort. It was the lightest thing, you see, transport-wise or motor-wise. It was the old Ford. Model T's they were, of course. You put your left foot down for first gear and let it up. That was top gear. The middle pedal was the reverse, and the right one was the brake. So quite a different system of driving on the old Model T Fords. Anyhow, they were very useful cars, very light, and they were the easiest way of getting light transport across the sandy places. Not too loose sand. If it was tractable at all, they would get on all right.
I suppose you would have been advancing for the Third Battle of Gaza. Am I right? You know, if the Turks were at Beersheba, this would have been before the time of October, wasn't it, 1917, the Third Battle of Gaza. Were you aware of any sort of activity for that? You know, were you taking a lot of ammunition up, I wonder? You're taking a lot of ammunition, you know, at this time when you went up to Beersheba, that area.
Yes. In the autumn of 1917, we moved up into Palestine to the Beersheba and Hebron area. We were taking ammunition and supplies to regiments of the 20th Army Corps and also the 74th and the 52nd Divisions.
And do you know if this was for the Third Battle of Gaza, or would that sort of occurred without your knowledge, do you think? Alan, this would have been Allenby's first victory. I can imagine if you were busy with your own activity, you know, it might not have...
Well, this was the first major advance, so I think this would involve the first battle of Gaza, because Allenby made two big advances.
And you were in the Beersheba area, were you?
You actually
went into Beersheba.
Yes, we saw the wells that the Turks had blown up, but not poisoned.
Was that normal with the Turks, that they didn't poison wells? Or would that have been an exception, do you think?
Well, we gained the impression that the Turks were clean fighters. We hoped that they wouldn't poison the wells, and they didn't. They blew them up, but they didn't poison them.
How were you coping with the ammunition supply? You know, did you find that so much of it came up by rail, and then you had to take it by lorry for another journey?
Well, we were detailed to pick up either ammunition or supplies, and we often had 4 tons of ammunition or shell. They were 4-ton lorries, and they would take the load all right, so we had different kinds of shells.
And where would you have picked them up from? Would this have been from a railhead?
The railhead was at a place called Calm, which was just below Beersheba.
And so, as the advance went forward, did this mean that you had to carry the ammunition for a much longer distance?
Yes. We were behind the troops, bumping them up all the time with ammunition and supplies as needed. Upon reflection, I have to say that I think General Allenby was a very, very wonderful man. We often saw him, of course. He would ride around in his Rolls Royce, and I noticed particularly that when we gave him the salute, which was a sharp incline of the head to the right, he would always acknowledge a salute when passing him on the road. For his overall strategy, I have the highest admiration. To begin with, it occurs to me that he succeeded in getting sufficient reinforcements before he would make any advance at all. Then, of course, one of the greatest difficulties in Palestine is the supply of water. It's in very short supply. At one time, I remember, we had only 2 water bottles full, possibly about 2 pints per day, to make our tea in, to wash ourselves and our clothes. And, well, as I say, it really was in short supply. Allenby, of course, well knew this, and he would not make an advance until the water supply was arranged for. A 250-mile pipeline was laid right across the desert from, I believe, about Kantara, right up to a place called Calm, just south of Beersheba, which was the railhead and big dump head for the British Army. From there, water could be loaded into fantasias, which were metal tanks, galvanized metal tanks. They could be carried, one on each side of a camel's back, and could be taken to inaccessible places, and quite a number, about 300 gallons of water in fantasias, could be loaded on one of our lorries, so that water was available to the troops everywhere. This was very fine strategy indeed, and of course helped the advance up towards Jerusalem. General Allenby himself entered Jerusalem on foot on the 17th of December 1917. We were just behind, following up with ammunition and supplies as required. This was a very interesting job, of course.
Allenby's entry into Jerusalem, were you, you would have been behind him at that time, were you?
Yes.
Yes. But did you hear about that when you went into Jerusalem yourself? Did you know what sort of impression?
Oh, yes, we knew somehow or other the... of course, there was the daily Egyptian paper, and we were short of many things in the Palestine Expeditionary Force, but, well, we weren't quite heathens, and we didn't know how things were going on.
Do you think he made a big impression going in by
him? Oh, yes, a very, very fine man. I can't speak too highly of him.
Am I right in thinking that they opened an old gate for him to go through?
I'm sorry, I don't know. I expect that it would be right up to a place called past Kilo 1, which you pass on the way from Beersheba and Hebron, Bethlehem, into Jerusalem. I expect it would be David's Tower. That seems to be the almost the centre point in Jerusalem, David's Tower.
Did you go to Jerusalem yourself?
Oh, yes, lots of times.
Well, what was it like? Because after all, the Turks had been there before, hadn't they?
The Holy City. Most of them are Mohammedans. You wouldn't touch it. Jerusalem is the Holy City, first to the Jews. It's their capital city. And to Mohammedans, because, of course, they worship Allah. And to us as Christians, of course, it's the place of the crucifixion of the Lord Jesus. So it is the Holy City. There's nothing like it. People who visit it today may think that much of it is, well, perhaps trippery and tawdry. It is, to an extent, but it's very, very wonderful. Actually, just a little later than this, we were in Jerusalem, billeted at Kilo 1, in an old Syrian orphanage, and we were there for at least 2 months, during which time Allenby was preparing for his next move. We had runs to all the district, all the area around, and one particular place was down to Jericho, very much down, 26,000 feet. And the stuff we took down was mostly tibin, which is camel's food, sort of a baled straw. Allenby had this dumped right on the Jericho plain, so that the Turkish planes, when they came over, they would see the big dump, and it might be assumed that Allenby was making his 1918 advance northwards up the Jordan Valley. But of course that didn't happen. For the 1918 advance, the strategy was that everything was prepared, our lorries were loaded up with water and supplies and got over to Jaffa, hiding underneath the orange trees. And instead of the first attack coming up the Jordan Valley, it came on the eastern side of Palestine from the Jaffa area, and the boats fired in from the sea coast, and we were then attached to the 5th Australian Cavalry, and they went away up the coast, and we covered Haifa, Nazareth, and across the Jordan Valley, north of the Sea of Galilee. The Turks had blown up the bridge across the Jordan there, but our engineers had made a wooden structure, and we crossed with the lorries this bridge and went right up to Damascus. The Turks had set fire to their remaining supplies there. We had been away from our camp several days, and we actually ran out of petrol. We didn't get quite up to Damascus just then. A staff officer came by, and he said, "I'm going into Damascus. I'll see if I can get you some petrol." He did. It was captured German supplies. It was pink stuff in barrels. However, we filled up the old PLSs with it, and they ran all right, and we continued into Damascus. We were working from Damascus for some little time. It was very interesting because the British Army tried to get as many supplies as possible from the Damascus area. In Palestine, we had been short of many things, particularly metal goods such as razor blades and so on. In addition, of course, to the usual shortage of water. In Damascus, a very great change. Lovely, cool water, plenty of everything you wanted. You could get lovely German razors and many other things. There was, of course, a sort of rate of exchange. The rate of exchange, if you hadn't quite enough money, was one tin of bully beef for 3 eggs. So we eked out our rations by making exchanges. And I remember, too, a very interesting experience going out to one little village to get grain. The Turks hadn't managed, apparently, to extract all the grain from the native people, but they were willing to let the British people have it, and our lorries got into the village all right. But on the way out, when the lorries were loaded with grain, we had to cross over a Mohammedan burial ground, and unfortunately our lorries sank down a couple of foot. And I know I had an awful job to engineer getting these lorries out. It was very interesting.
You're talking of a very big journey that you made from Jerusalem, aren't you, in your lorries?
Yes.
Yes. How did you have many problems, you know, on the way? I was wondering about the different terrain, what the roads were like, you know, how you coped.
Well, we were, by now, very accustomed to them, both the wet season and the hot weather as well. There is a great difference. In the dry season, you can take a lorry over the hills and mountains without any trouble, apart from clouds of dust everywhere, which got down your throat and everywhere else. But when the rainy season came, the soil is such that what was one day a passable, dusty track became now a ravine full of water. So it was very difficult. I remember the rainy season at Christmas time, 1917. It was very wet and a wee bit cold too. And our 1917 Christmas dinner was eaten in a dump near Bethlehem. It was the usual bully beef eaten with a jackknife and a little drop of tea from a Dixie made on a Primus, and that was our Christmas dinner, 1917.
The other thing I was going to ask you about the petrol, you know, you mentioned how you ran out of petrol approaching Damascus. Mm-hmm. How did you cope on that long journey?
Well, Palestine is not a tremendously big country. It was standard on the Peerless lorries that locked on the side. You had three tins. They were 2 gallon tins, the old petrol. Where you got it from, Shell or any of the big companies. We had a POW, petrol, oil and water. So you had a small reserve supply on your lorries. In addition to that, the petrol for there was in 4 gallon tins, and you could always carry spare, but you didn't want to carry too much spare in the 4 gallon tins because they had a tendency to leak. I do remember that one of our sergeants was going up the pass of Enab up to Jerusalem with some lorries, and he had a load of petrol. He had 800 gallons in 4 gallon tins, and I suppose the driver must have wanted to fill up with petrol, and whether some overspilled on his hot exhaust or not, I don't know, but the whole 800 gallons went up the lorry as well. I remember Sergeant Lane's remarks afterwards when questioned by the brigade officer, "Well, Sergeant, did you not use your pyrene?" I will not put on tape the sergeant's reply.
What is the pyrene?
Pardon?
What is the pyrene?
A pyrene is a small fire extinguisher which holds about a pint of fire putting out liquid.